Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
We'll do our best. Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at RTE.ie. We were all delighted to see the success of the Banshees of Inisherin at the Golden Globes last night. Three Golden Globes. And Colin Farrell got one, and he made a lovely speech. And don't you love that? It's grown men telling each other that they love each other. He loves Martin McDonagh and he loves Brendan Gleeson. And it was just a lovely, honest, from the heart speech. And if you're going to be a best man at a wedding, I would suggest that you look at that speech and you take on board the way he delivered it, that it was from the heart. There was no notes. He wasn't trying to get any big gags in or anything like that. He just spoke from the heart. That's the way to do it. So there you go. A textbook speech there from Colin Farrell last night. He did mention the Banshee herself, and he said that, I'm not making it up, and that was played by, or she was played by Sheila Flitton, and Sheila Flitton played Mrs. McCormack, but was the Banshee, if you haven't seen it, and Sheila's coming in to talk to us today. She got a mention yesterday at the Golden Globes on a world stage, and she's coming in to us to talk to us on a national stage today, and I'm really looking forward to that. The other thing about last night was a lot of the lads were out in coloured suits. Our own Barry Keoghan was out in a sort of a powder blue suit. I believe it's Louis Vuitton. And then there was an orange suit, a man who played Batman. Can't remember his name. And then there were tie-dye suit. There was all sorts of things. And that's great to see that as well, that men are in touch with their colourful side. And then there was Austin Butler. Austin Butler, if you don't know, played Elvis in the amazing Baz Luhrmann movie, the biopic, whatever you're having yourself. And he got an award for best actor in a drama. Is that it? And then Colin Farrell won his award for best actor in a musical or comedy. Go figure that. Anyway. In his speech last night, a lot of people remarked that maybe he hasn't given up on the whole Elvis thing. Because this is him. Thank you very much.
Thank you for opening your hearts, your memories, your home to me. Lisa Marie, Priscilla, I love you forever. And lastly, Elvis Presley himself, you were an icon and a rebel, and I love you so much.
Thank you very much.
That's a real Elvis. But this is what Austin sounded like before he played the part of Elvis.
Yeah, I love 90s grunge style. Red flannels and ripped up jeans, right, and leather coats and stuff. You couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, and an interviewer said, you know, do you think you're doing the old Elvis thing a bit too much?
Yeah, I don't even think about it. I I don't think I sound like him still, but I guess I must because I hear it a lot. I think... You know, I often liken it to when somebody lives in another country for a long time, and I had 3 years where that was my only focus in life, so I'm sure that there's just pieces of my DNA that will always be linked in that way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. He'd want to get rid of that now, where he won't get another part in Hollywood if he's arriving to all the auditions speaking like Elvis Presley. But there you go, that's what happens. But he immersed himself in the role for 3 years. He didn't see his friends or family for 3 years. And that's the way Baz Luhrmann makes his movies. And that's why it's so good. His attention to detail and the immersion of the lead actor. Now, more mundane things. An email from Milwaukee to ray@rte.ie. Hey there. My friends and family are having an increasingly heated debate, we like heated debates, about a chocolate bar. We really like heated debates on chocolate bars. This one's from the 1990s, hoping the public can weigh in before we never speak to each other again. Well, we can't have that. The gist is, 45% of us believe there were two popular lunchbox bars from the early mid-1990s. One was the Panky Bar, P-A-N-K-Y, and the other was the Panda Bar. Both were chocolate and wafer, which crumbled into dust like an Egyptian sarcophagus when you bit into them. Very colourful writing. One was possibly a Dunn's Own brand and both had a blue and white outer wrapper with a silver inner wrapper. They sure don't wrap them like that anymore. That's one 45%. The other 45% believe there was no such bar as the Panda Bar, only the Panky Bar. What about the other 10%? Well, and because we're all in our 40s, 10% of us don't remember either and keep referring to a timeout bar. Let's ignore the 10% for the moment, says the person. Do you, your staff? I don't have staff. Your staff. team, colleagues, yes. Or the general public, that'd be you listening. Remember the Panda or Panky bars? Did both or only one of these bars exist? Hoping you can help settle the great Panda Panky debate and perhaps spur people to fondly remember fun treats from their childhoods. Let's disrupt the January diet chatter. Many thanks. Mar Garvey, Meelik, County Clare, currently in Milwaukee, USA, and having this heated debate virtually. Yes, and the Panda Panky debate emanated in Meelik, County Clare. We have evidence here. I'm looking at a picture of a Panky bar. It was made by Nabisco. Wafers with filling and milk chocolate confection coating. And it's a pack of nine. 90 calories per wafer. And it is, as you describe, three wafers surrounded by chocolate. And I can't say what it tastes like or what the experience is like because I only have a picture of it. So we have evidence there, photographic evidence from the World Wide Web that Panky Bar existed. So now we have to establish, was there a Panda Bar? And could it have been a Dunn's Stores own brand? Any clues, any leads to ray@rte.ie or 51551 for texts? I was gone past lunchboxes at that stage. I was out working in the 90s. What do I remember? Trigger bars. I remember Trigger bars. Remember Trigger bars? What else was there? There was a macaroon or some sort of bar like that. The Curly Whirly still exists, of course. There was an awful lot of hard toffee covered in chocolate back in the 70s and the 80s. You got your money's worth out of it because, you know, you'd be chewing on it for quite some time. So Panky Panda. Thank you for that. And Susan has been on, and this is on the back of our chat with Stephen and Benita from Aware, and they have their life skills course, which sounds like a great idea. They've been doing it for 11 years, and it's a course that, I suppose, sets you up with the tools to live your life and, I suppose, become resilient and know how the brain works and how moods work, and should you be going to your GP or is it something that just life throws at you and you might be down or stressed for a little while and you come out the other side. Anyway, Susan says, I'm often struck with how philosophical you are in your analysis of mental well-being, and I heard you say that we need a being human course in schools. I agree. And just to assure you, many schools do teach philosophy at the junior cycle level, which attends to the issues that concern young people through dialogue. And she points me towards a number of articles, one that she's written and another one as well. And I'm going to read those. And thanks for that, Susan. Thank you very much. It's every day until the end of the week. Spare. It's still a great title. Prince Harry's memoir. It's breaking all sorts of records. The Guardian report today that it's the UK's fastest selling non-fiction book, recording figures of 400,000 on its first day. 400,000 on its first day. And Richard Osman, who knows a thing or two about fast-selling and best-selling books, says in a tweet today, to put Harry's 400,000 book sales into perspective, that would put him in the top 10 books for the entire year. After just 1 week. Well, we're in January 11th, nearly 2 weeks, but I see what you're saying. So breaking all sorts of records. His spare. And yesterday we played a bit of the audiobook where he recounts going to a Spice Girls concert with his dad, and Niamh did a very good job of putting his lyrics to music, and I brought them home last night, and this is what you do of a Tuesday evening during January, because it's dark and it's raining outside, so you just go into your room and fiddle with your knobs and all that sort of thing, and this is what comes out.
Beep. If you want my future, forget my past. If you want to get with me, better make it fast. Better make it fast. Better make it fast. Beat and tapping his foot. Beat and tapping his foot. Beat and tapping his foot. Beat, beat, beat.
If you want to be my lover, you gotta get with my friends. Make it last forever.
Harry Spice. And while we're on music, I'm excited by this. You too are releasing a new compilation on St. Patrick's Day. And it's a compilation of reimagined versions of their songs. It's called Songs of Surrender, with reference to themselves, as in Bono's memoir stroke biography. And by way of a tease, to whet our appetite for the main event on St. Patrick's Day, they've released the 37-second clip from the reimagined version of Beautiful Day.
The heart is blue. It shoots up through the stony ground, but there's no room. No space to rent in this town. You thought you'd found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
There you go. That sounds good. Looking forward to that. Songs of Surrender for release on St. Patrick's Day. I loved Banshees of Inisherin. Colin Farrell has gone up in my estimation tenfold. His honesty of feelings should be on the school curriculum, says Maeve. And what about Barry Keoghan eating all Colin Farrell's breakfast cereal? That was good too. And it's Barry Keoghan, not Johan. Thank you for that. That's from Barry himself. I thought he'd be still in bed. Panda Bar was made by Aaron Candy in McKee Avenue, Finglas, says George. So there we go. We've evidence, if we can confirm George's text, that the Panda Bar did exist. So we've Panda and Panky. So 45% of the Milwaukee crew were correct. Big Time Bar and Honey Bee, says somebody else. And that sounds like the United Bar, I remember, that you're describing. And I think they're confusing Panda with Penguin Bars. Panky was the cheaper bar that I desperately tried to swap for the United Bars, says Lynn. A lot of bars going on there. Yeah, and there was a theory upstairs that the Panda Bar was a Dunn's version of the Penguin Bar. So they may have been made for Dunn's by Aaron Candy in McKee Avenue in Finglas, says that person. According to Colin Farrell's publicist, Colin has thanked Sheila in all his speeches. Oh, there you go. There you go. And Sheila will be on to us. And we got on to Colin as well to see if he would come on and we could congratulate him today. And his publicist said that he was working. Colin can't take the call today. He's working. Which is fair enough. That's what he does. He works. 5 on 5 5 1. Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. Dan Ross, I'm Coming Out, with the signature Nile Rodgers guitar there. He produced that, as far as I know. A great tune. Oops, bit of an afters there. 5 on 5 5 1, ray at rte.ie. So the Panky Panda Bar controversy continues. I checked the Irish newspaper archives, says Dr. Paul O'Brien. That's the level we're at here. And the archives of the Irish Times as well, and could not find a reference to Panda Bars. Thank you, Paul, for your time and your research. Michael C. says, do you remember the old Flash Bar? I do. A hard toffee bar coated in milk chocolate. They were all like that back in the day. Yes, Panda Bars did exist. They were a chocolate-covered toffee-type bar. Had a blue and white wrapper as described, and was around in the late 70s, early 80s. They were delicious. Bring them back, says Eamon Byrne in County Galway. And you've got to give the Big Time Bar a shout out. Toffee covered in chocolate, yellow wrapper and a picture of a clock on it. Yum, yum, yum. I remember that one. Does anyone remember a chocolate bar called Secret? It was about 25 years ago. I lived in them. Don't remember that one. So there you go. That's where we're at so far. So far. Now, Alison and Ray will be with us after 4 o'clock. Both of them are relationship counsellors. They give great advice, and you can have some of their advice if you're in need of it. Ray at RTE.ie. Ray at RTE.ie. Alison Keating is a psychoanalyst. Sorry, is a psychologist, and Ray O'Neill is a psychoanalyst, and they'll be with us after 4 o'clock. So if you want any advice, need any advice from them, Ray at RTE.ie. Now, I better tell you about our quiz as well, which happens after 4 o'clock. We're looking for two of you to come on and answer 3 questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize. And this week, it's a 2-night stay for 2 people in the Galmont Hotel and Spa, located on the idyllic shores of Loch Atalia, right in the heart of Galway City. And they have the outdoor terrace, they have the Spirit One Spa, and you can get bespoke cocktails, no less, in Cooper's Bar and Lounge. Ideal location, overlooking Galway Bay, to stay and enjoy a breakaway. And of course, because you're so close to Galway City, You have everything on your doorstep that Galway has to offer. TheGalmont.com, TheGalmont.com. And if you want to go further afield, of course, you can go to the Atlantic Way and all into Connemara or wherever. Your qualifying question today, this Wednesday afternoon, here it is. Which glitzy awards ceremony took place in the early hours of this morning? Was it the Golden Globes or the Brass Globes? Which glitzy awards ceremony took place last night, this morning? Was it the Golden Globes or the Brass Globes? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, as I said, huge success last night for The Banshees of Inisherin. Best Picture in the musical or comedy category. Best Actor for Colin Farrell. Best Screenplay for writer-director Martin McDonagh. And lovely speeches as well. And when Colin was doing his thank you, we'll just take an excerpt from his speech.
I want to thank Sheila Flitton, who played our Banshee. I want to thank the cast and the crew and the locals of Inishmore and Achill Island that brought us in. And there was lines blurred between all of us so that we were just one big family for the betterment of all of our souls on that experience.
Sheila Flitton.
How are you?
Good afternoon. So I believe that he's mentioned you in every speech that he's done.
Well, I have to say I adore the man. And don't forget, I had a broken shoulder when I went down.
Right.
And he literally reminded me. I mean, they're all brilliant. And Brendan, and they're all fabulous. But something special about Colin. I'd worked with him before. Neither of us remembered it. But I just don't know. He's the kindest person, that's the Jesus I ever met.
He's very charming and he has a big heart.
But it's genuine.
Yes, no, yeah.
It's not like here today, gone tomorrow.
Yeah. And I was just saying at the top there that a lovely speech, heartfelt.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I heard it on the radio this morning at 7 o'clock and I swear to God, I thought I was dreaming when I heard my name. I mean, people don't go. I have people saying, who's Sheila Flitton?
Yeah, because Flitton. Where does that name come from? I've never heard of the name Flitton before.
Well, my husband, rest his soul, was English, but they never found anyone either. And then someone said they came from County Cork. And my son David tried to trace us all down there, but I don't think there is. There's plenty of Hearns, but there's no Flitton.
You're a Hearn originally.
I'm a Hearn.
Are you originally from Cork?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. Whereabouts in Cork?
Well, first we were in St. Finbar's Road, and then we moved to Gronabraher.
Right.
And then after that, my story is so long, you just don't have time.
Oh, we have a good bit of time as it happens. So here's the thing. You celebrated a birthday last Saturday.
I sure did.
Go on, tell them.
Well, no, I'm not going to say. I tell you what, you can all guess what it was. But if I say my age and...
Well, I'll tell you what, here we go. Right, here we go.
No, I'll tell you why.
Go on.
Because I love doing my one-woman play for... Mm. Active Retirement, Ladies Club, done all over the place. Now, if I get a call to go down the country and they know my age, they're going to think I fall off the train.
Right.
So, don't you think it wouldn't be...
Wouldn't
be wise?
Well, I don't know but I think it's brilliant. I think it should be celebrated.
Okay, I'm 90.
There you go.
Last Saturday, you got around.
You gave in very quickly now.
Bloody interviewers. They can't get everything out of you.
90, happy birthday.
Last Saturday,
right.
We had a big fan. My daughter wanted me to have a party and I said, no, I don't want a party. Yeah. But sure, look, the whole gang, had plenty of family.
And you have four children, two boys and two girls. And boys and girls, because the eldest is what age?
65 or 66.
Yeah, retirement age.
Well, he is, and I'm going to have to mention it, I'm not trying to sell anything for myself, so I'm going to mention, he's now come under David Ahern. Took my father's name.
Right.
And he has a series of books called... he really has a series of books on Amazon. And they're absolutely brilliant.
Right, David Ahern. David Ahern.
David Ahern.
Right. Okay, The Banshees of Inisherin, and you play the part of Ms. McCormack. And I was telling you before we went on air that you were very scary. Very scary.
Well, that's the real me.
It's not, I can tell. I've only met you 5 minutes ago, but it's not the real you at all. But so you are the Banshee as such.
Well, I don't know, because Martin, you know, his way of writing, never said I was the Banshee. I played Mrs. McCormack, but Colin and other people all called me the Banshee, all the cast called me the Banshee.
So you, the title role,
Thank you.
There you go. Now, there's actually, that you mentioned, Colin, there's a piece in it, and this will, if people haven't seen it, it'll let them know how scary you are. So it's you and his character, Porrig, talking about what might happen in the future. And let's have a listen.
Oh, hello there, Mrs. McCormick.
A death shall come to Inishharan afore the month is out.
A death, huh?
Maybe even two deaths.
Well, that'll be sad.
We shall pray to the Lord. 'Tis neither you nor poor Siobhan will be either of them.
Well, is that a nice thing to be saying?
I wasn't trying to be nice. I was trying to be accurate.
Hey! And the shawl, which people would, I'd imagine, in their heads, imagine that a banshee would wear a shawl, but it dual purpose for you, because you'd broken the shoulder.
Well, I would have had that anyway.
Yeah. But it disguised the fact that your arm was in a sling.
My arm was in a sling.
Well, and was there a time when it looked like it wasn't going to happen?
Well, it was amazing. 2 weeks before, I thought it wasn't going to happen. I thought, who the hell wants you with the broken shoulder? And, of course, production ran to me. And Jo, she's lovely now, the producer. She kept saying, I kept saying, isn't there plenty actors now in Galway? Like, and I mean, maybe I felt a little vulnerable at the time. But she said, Martin said, I want Sheila. Now, I had been nominated for the Beauty Queen of Nan, which is Martin. I go, Martin's my god. And I thought, this falls through. This was my dream, like a dream. Never happened. Never. And they worked it out. My son David came down with me to Galway. I was a bit vulnerable, all right, for the first, you know, thinking, are they mad? Or am I mad? But sure, look, there was no real pain. I mean, it was broken for a long time, but Everybody were there to just help me around the place.
Support you.
Support me, yeah.
And in listening to Colin Farrell's speech last night, he mentioned the whole cast, the crew, the locals on Achill and Inishmore, and it sounded like there was a lovely atmosphere there.
Oh, I tell you, when he said family, now I know, I hate this business if you do a play and we were all family, because really they all go away and forget about you. This was a family. Every single one of that cast. And we're nearly all of them in touch. And I've been in, Martin's been in touch, Colin's been in touch. And like, I think it's Martin. He's such an amazing man, you know. There's something about him, again, something special, you know.
So he gets great performances out of people like Colin.
And without any hassle, not shouting and roaring and screaming and grimacing and all the rest, nothing.
I'd imagine it's something to do with a mutual respect.
That's what it is, you know. And you just love going on set and seeing him, because you know he's not going to attack you, you know. Like, yeah. I mean, I've worked in here, I hate to say, in RTÉ, well, over the other place. and they were all gods.
Yeah. Were you in the Reardons or Glenroe?
In Glenroe.
Glenroe.
That was nice.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you were in The Snapper.
And the three of his things.
The trilogy, The Commitments, The Snapper and The Van.
I pop up like a bad penny. And I know that it takes Colin Farrell.
To mention it globally.
To mention me.
Yeah. So when was your first acting job, Sheila?
Well, I started in Cork in the, you know now yourself, in the little amateur.
Yeah, groups. But what age were you?
I was about 16 then. But then, you see, I went off to England. My dad said, get down off that stage and stop making a fool of yourself. So having done other jobs, I went off to England and did nursing, then came back and went straight. I went into Brendan Smith's and I won the scholarship out of Brendan Smith's.
Oh, what was Brendan Smith's? Was it
Brendan was
a stage
amazing.
School, was it?
He was his first. He was the first.
Right.
He
okay.
was amazing.
Right.
And Beryl Fagan, his wife.
Right.
They were amazing.
So. And you were top of the class, yeah. So your dad didn't want you to be an actor?
Sure, look, they knew, I mean, my mum and dad, sure. Plays I've written, my mum said to me, she didn't even realise I was in it and written them. First one was Harbour Nights, and she goes, Sheila, your language is shocking. Well, you see, when I've used really bad language, but in Cork, it was always like, oh, Jesus, Mary and Holy St. Joseph. And of course, that was in the play.
Mm.
And she gave out stink.
Yeah.
They didn't understand writing, like you wrote it or you're in it. They weren't. They weren't.
What
there
did
weren't
they do?
Any books in our house.
Were they not? No.
No.
Yeah. So no. What did they do? What did your mum and dad do?
My dad, dad's a long story. He was in the army, you know, deserted the army.
Right.
Then he was down the docks. He did. He was a character.
Mm.
He was absolutely amazing. No, he really was.
And how many of you were there?
Of
in the family?
Oh, there was five.
Five, right.
Five.
Yeah. Small enough for that time.
Well, you know yourself, they lost a few. God
loved
them.
Yes,
and
yes,
yeah.
Yeah,
nobody just had.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I've done the maths now. So you've been acting, Sheila Flitton, for 74 years.
Oh, you're rotten.
No, I'm not rotten. I think that's. We should be celebrating. Is that amazing?
Well, I'm
that's
celebrating.
That's not amazing, yes.
I'm celebrating.
So, is this a high point now? You know, the mention.
Definitely.
And where did you see it first on the big screen, The Banshees?
The premiere,
right. And what was that like? I know you've seen yourself on the big screen before, but was this different?
It was very different. And. I don't know. It's not like going in and seeing somebody else's film. You know, it's strange.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at all the characters that you know so well, you know.
Yeah. There's nice text coming in. They're telling me here. I remember meeting Sheila in Dunmore East around 1988. She shot Echoes down there.
Echoes.
Yeah, I palled around with her gorgeous daughter, Aisling, and loved our chats in the caravan. Wish her well from me. That's June Fardy in Waterford. Yeah. My profile picture is Sheila's character. It's a fantastic role. Absolutely love her, Clay Pipe. We didn't mention that yet. and her portrayal, Martin McDonagh, made a perfect choice. Yeah, and women of that age would have smoked a clay pipe.
Oh yeah.
And did you have to do the thing, or was it?
Oh, I was part of it,
yeah,
prop.
Yeah.
But I have one also. A real one was given by an old actress. Again, it's real, of course, they're both real. In my one woman play, Beezy.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that, Beezy.
Beezy is amazing. I mean, David was only 27 when he wrote that.
This is your son, who's now 65.
Yeah, no. He's going to kill you now. Anyway.
No.
You better publicise his book now. And imagine,
yes, no, we've mentioned it already. Yeah.
We'll
get the name and we'll
get the name.
Yeah. We have David Ahern, not David.
David Ahern, because
yes,
he's been so good. I mean,
so Beezy,
they're all great kids.
Yeah,
but there's something about the writing, because he wrote that at such a young age. Yeah. Now, he'd written bits and pieces before, but he was in Edinburgh University lecturing when he wrote that. Then he made documentaries. But we toured everywhere.
So it's a one-woman play. It's about a character, Beezy Gallagher, a real-life character who lived on an island. She was the last inhabitant of an island in Sligo.
Yeah.
And you're telling her story, is that it?
Oh, well, I've become her.
Oh, you become her, yeah.
I actually become her, because I was only about maybe 50 or something when I first started. And I just love the character.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I've written other stuff, books and plays, but I'm really just, I had no real big education or anything. So I'm a storyteller, but David is the real one who put all that touches, you know, that lovely poetic stuff and all that.
But it's in the genes, you see. Obviously, it's in the genes.
In the genes, all right.
Yeah, it's in the genes. please give Sheila Flitton my congratulations both on her birthday and her acting success. Thrilled for her. Met her years ago in Cavan. In The Beauty Queen of Lenan.
Oh.
She was a joy. That's Mary Hanley. And your son's books are called Madame Tulip Mysteries.
Madame Tulip Mysteries. And they're going, America just loves it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I know I shouldn't be doing this, but then I think, well, everybody goes on radio or selling a book. And I don't need to sell Beezy, my actor for retirement groups now. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love it so much. I love it so much. I mean, apart from The Banshee, you know, the two things go together, because I just get it. Even David still gets a great thrill out of me doing Beezy at this age.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Did you get any mementos, souvenirs from the set of The Banshees of Inisherin?
Oh, did I? What?
Go on.
Oh, Colin drops. He didn't drop himself. He did come into the hotel once because Aisling came down and I wanted her to meet him. But he, you know, quietly. But when he dropped in my present at the end, it was a poncho, beautiful brown poncho, and in from Inisherin. And I just couldn't believe it. Brendan had a chair, and when he didn't use it, and I was up in the bar, some of those scenes aren't there, but there were small scenes, but he gave it to me to sit on. And coming away, I got that. And at the back of it, he wrote, "Now I've got your back shield."
Ah, very good. He has your back. Yeah. He has your back.
And yeah. I have both of them. I treasure them. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant to hear an icon like Sheila Flitton on with Geray. She's a super actor and great to see her getting a shout out at the Golden Globes. So there. I'd say you've been Googled all over the place.
Oh, I listen, text him back all morning. Yeah. Text him back.
No, because people are going, shit, because it's such an unusual name. And he said it with such clarity.
Oh, look,
so the people
are
going, who's Sheila Flitton? Who's Sheila
Flitton? Why would he have done that? I mean, he's...
Why would he have done
we
it?
We are very close. I just, we had some kind of, I think, as I said, because of his kindness and me with the broken shoulder. But apart from broken shoulder, we could talk about anything.
Mm.
You know, that kind of a person. He would be like a son. In fact, you would talk to someone like that about things more than probably would to your family.
But that's the thing. They say you'll share more with a stranger than a member of your family.
But he's not a stranger
anymore. Not anymore, he isn't. No, no.
I get lovely.
I'm fascinated, just back to something you said at the very beginning, that you'd worked together before, but neither of you remember.
Neither of you remember. All I know is that I was in Dame Street looking in a shop window at videos. I think it must have been some kind of a gangster. He couldn't remember.
Was it intermission? No.
Oh, it wasn't anything. I don't know.
No,
maybe
it wasn't
anything
big.
He was never out there.
Oh, yeah. Probably never. Right. It could have been a short or something like that.
Yeah. But right. he was, even then. Now, I didn't have a big part. I don't know how big his part was. But he gave me a beautiful, did a photograph, come in here, Sheila, we'll have a photograph in the trailer. And like my kids, you know.
Yeah.
God, that's a while back, so you can imagine. The kids are all still all mad about a man, Brendan Gleeson, anyway. They're on, but the cast, you hate to not talk about the cast because they're just...
Great, yeah.
They should have... But
Kerry
that's
Condon,
why I feel
Barry
a bit
Keoghan.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Oh, Kerry.
Yeah.
Kerry keeps in touch. And I have to say, no, I'm going mad like that she didn't get there. This time.
Now, what do you think, and what are the, what's the chat and the gossip on the WhatsApp groups? I don't know if you're on them, but what about the Oscars now?
You make me laugh. She's Mirren Joseph to be mentioned on the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
The Oscar, if Colin doesn't got that Oscar, oh.
Yeah.
And he will.
Do you think? Yeah.
He will. He will. And Brendan's grand, you see. You know, Brendan's got one, hasn't he?
No. He doesn't have an Oscar.
Didn't Brendan got an Oscar for something?
No, that's the mad thing. He doesn't.
I thought he had.
Yeah, no, he should. You know, that's,
well, he should have had.
He should have had. Yeah, he should have had.
Jesus,
yeah.
He's so brilliant. I'll tell you. Can I tell you?
Go on.
First day, I arrived, as I said, a bit vulnerable, maybe at the reading, and I watched Martin and Colin do it. And you know what? I looked at the pair of them and I thought, do you know, we can't act over here at all. And that's a terrible thing to think, like, when you're an actress and you're going into the film.
You thought
but
you couldn't
so
act.
Oh, yes, none of us over in Ireland or any because they were so... I couldn't believe the magic, the chemistry between the pair of them.
Yeah.
They're just something else.
Of course, and they started that off in In Bruges, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And Colin won a Golden Globe for that as well. Laughing at the Banshee, that's you, being a Norrie from Cork. I'm from Churchfield and real proud that she's a Corkonian. Brilliant, says Trish. And somebody else is suggesting that you should know who's going to win the Oscars because you're a Banshee.
Oh, maybe I do and I'm not saying.
Maybe, yes. All I want you to do is be accurate. Listen, Sheila, I really enjoyed that. And
well, thank you very much
for coming in. And I'm sure we'll chat again.
Well, I'm sure we will.
And happy birthday again.
And the very best and good luck.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for telling the whole world my blooming birthday.
You said it. I didn't say it. You said it. It took me all 10 seconds.
No, you got it wrong.
Go on, yeah, go on. Sheila Flitton, ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, loads of talk, it being January, of giving up stuff. And one of the things that people sort of attempt to tackle in January is the cigarettes, or are the cigarettes. And quit.ie, they have a great TV ad on at the moment. The government has approved a ban on the sale of e-cigarettes to minors, and that's working its way through the Oireachtas. They've promised it's going to happen early in 2023, which is around now. And we're going to cover everything to do with smoking and vaping now with Dr. Paul Kavanagh. Paul is the public health advisor to the HSE Quit Programme. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
I'll just bring that over. There. Yeah, right. Now, so it is the time. Is January a good time to give up cigarettes?
Yeah, absolutely. We would find that January is a very popular time for people to quit. So start of a new year, people will have been reflecting over the Christmas period in terms of habits and behaviours and improvements that they want to take. So it will be a common time for people who smoke to consider stop smoking. So they might have been thinking about the potential health consequences associated with smoking. They might be hearing concern from family and friends. They might even be thinking about the costs associated with it. So very conscious in terms of concern around inflation at the moment and people's pockets. And if somebody is smoking 20 cigarettes a day, that's costing 100 euros a week or 5,000 euros a year. So that might be another reason that might trigger somebody to think about stopping quitting in January.
And the majority of people who smoke would like to quit.
Absolutely, yeah. So here in Ireland, regularly each year we do a Healthy Ireland survey. So through those surveys, 2 out of 3 people would tell us who smoke that they're interested in quitting. And each year, people who smoke would tell us 1 in 2 of them make a quit attempt. So definitely there's a very high interest among people who smoke in Ireland in quitting.
Okay. And the ad, very strong ad. So there's a baldy beardy man like myself who works in a high stress environment in a restaurant kitchen, and his friend, the cigarette, a man you've managed to cast, a man who looks like a cigarette, he is constantly there tempting him. So there's 4 scenarios. He's in a work situation, your man is knocking at the window, smoke me, then he's out with his mates. Social situation, again, he's there. He gets very angry at the window that time because that's probably the most difficult environment for people not to smoke. And then he's on the bus home and eventually he's home and your man's there. But he doesn't succumb to the temptation.
That's it.
So just talk to me a little bit about the research that would have gone into that plot line, if you like.
Absolutely, Ray. And look, you've kind of told the storyline of it very well. Yeah. So whenever we develop one of our mass media campaigns within the HSE, the first thing that we do is go out and we speak to people who smoke, because we want to understand what their experience is and how do we connect and engage with them. And this year when we went out and listened to people, one of the things that they spoke to us about is the control that smoking has over their lives. So they told us about, you know, needing to leave social situations, weddings, birthdays and things like that to go outside and smoke. They told us about how their daily routines are dictated by them in terms of their smoking. And they also told us about the control that smoking has over their purse and wallet. And they told us that they're interested in taking back control. So for us within the HSE Quit program, I think what that clarified for us is that we really need to call out the fact that smoking is an addiction. There are psychological and there are physical components to that. And once you call out smoking as an addiction, then I think what that does for people who smoke is it really encourages them to think about reaching out for support and getting help to quit. And that's where we can come in through the HSE Quit programme.
Yeah, so smokers are addicted to nicotine.
Absolutely. It's a highly addictive substance. There are physical components to that and there are psychological components to that. So if you think about any addiction, if you want to break that addiction, then you really need to reach out. You need to get the right support. Okay. And that support that we can provide through the HSE Quit programme.
And most people start smoking in their teens.
Absolutely. That's what research would tell us. So most people who start smoking, they would start in their teens. And unfortunately, the earlier that somebody starts smoking or using nicotine, the more likely it is that they will become addicted to that and that will become a lifelong habit. Now, interestingly, through the good work that we've done as a country in terms of changing our norms around smoking, we have seen the age at which people start smoking increase, which is a positive trend. But still we have concerns in terms of younger people and the fact that they may be starting to smoke.
So Tobacco-Free Ireland was launched 10 years ago.
That's right, back in 2013.
Okay, yeah. And they had very ambitious targets.
That's right. So Tobacco-Free Ireland, that's government's policy on tobacco control in Ireland. And one of the characteristics of that policy is that for the first time, it changes the frame from just controlling the harm caused by tobacco at a population level to actually bringing it to an end completely. So it's in the title, Tobacco-Free Ireland. The ambition there is that we will reduce smoking in the population to minimal levels. And by minimal levels, what I mean by that is smoking prevalence less than 5%.
Okay. And where are we at now?
So stepping back from it, if you look at it over a number of decades, in the late 90s, about 1 in 3 people in Ireland would have smoked.
33%.
In terms of where we are at the moment, then 1 in 5 people in Ireland smoke at the moment. That's through the most recent Healthy Ireland survey. And we would be a little bit concerned because we haven't seen reductions in smoking prevalence over the last couple of years. So we would be concerned that smoking prevalence may have stalled in the population.
So that target of 5% by 2025 is not going to happen.
It's looking increasingly unrealistic.
I'm looking at one of the things that you authored back in 2018. And if it keeps going the way it's going, as in the reductions over years keeps going, if that pattern continues, you will reach the 5%, or we will reach the 5% target in 2052.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I suppose what that underscores in terms of where we are at the moment in relation to smoking prevalence in the population, and the fact that there's quite a distance to go if we continue current trends to reaching that goal of a tobacco-free Ireland, we really need to double down on our efforts to get there.
Did the pandemic have any influence on it, do you think?
I think without a doubt. You know, I think the pandemic has had huge impacts on our lives in terms of people's behaviours, particularly their behaviours around health. We know that people changed physical activity, they changed their diet, and we know that people changed their smoking behaviour as well. Now, we think that the effects of the pandemic have been mixed. So some people might have stopped smoking. Some people may have, who would otherwise have quit smoking, may have continued smoking. So I think the pandemic is a factor in all of that.
You wouldn't have reached 5% by 2025, and even without the pandemic.
Yeah, well, I think when the goal was set back in 2013, I think it was the right goal. I mean, if you think about the harm caused by smoking at a population level, how many people die? Within an average week here in Ireland, we see 100 deaths from smoking.
Okay.
Within an average week, we see 1,000 people hospitalised from smoking-related harm. So just to put a picture on that for you, Ray, in terms of the current issues that we have in terms of hospital trolleys, about 5% or 1 in 20 beds across the hospital system
are
filled with patients who are there because of smoking-related harm. That's the equivalent of University Hospital Limerick or St Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, full on a daily basis with people.
And a lifetime of smoking, how much does that reduce your life expectancy by?
So we know that smoking is incredibly harmful for people's health. So we know that 1 in 2 people who smoke will die from smoking-related disease. People who smoke can expect on average to lose 10 years of life. And smoking is a cause of a number of important diseases. So it causes cancer, it causes heart disease, stroke and lung disease as well.
We've done items like this over the years. My heart goes out to people who smoke every time. Because they know everything that, you know, they probably know it better than most people, people who don't smoke, because they tune in, or maybe they've switched off the radio by now. So my heart goes out to them because they know that what they're doing is very harmful to their health.
Yes.
And yet because it's an addiction, they find it very difficult to quit.
Absolutely. No, I think you've characterised it very well there, Ray. So I think, and that's supported by data from the Healthy Ireland survey, people who currently smoke, they know that it's harmful. They know that it's harmful for their health. They're interested in quitting. 2 in 3 people are interested in quitting. They're making quit attempts. But unfortunately, here in Ireland, too many people quit without support. So they go it alone. They take it all on their own shoulders.
Right.
And what we're doing with our new campaign is that we're helping people understand this is an addiction. And if you want to overcome any addiction, you have to reach out and get the right support.
Okay. So they can go to quit.ie. I remember speaking to a colleague of yours probably 6 or 7 years ago, and they were able to say from HSE research the best way to quit.
Absolutely.
Which is?
Absolutely. So really, if somebody is going to make a quit attempt, the best way to do that is with support. And when I say support, that's a combination of behavioural support or working with a stop smoking advisor, and then coupling that with a stop smoking medicine. So that would be something like nicotine replacement therapy, and using that stop smoking medicine as a combination. So using it as a patch and also using a spray or a lozenge or a gum. And the very good news for people who smoke who are interested in quitting is that HSE services are available across the country. They're free of charge. The stop smoking advisors are trained. They provide a professional service. And in terms of that support, particularly that nicotine replacement therapy, that's now available free of charge through our services. So we have overcome the financial barriers that people might have had in terms of accessing the most effective support. If somebody uses those supports, if somebody couples working with a stop smoking advisor with nicotine replacement therapy, they can increase their chances of becoming smoke free by fourfold.
Right. So that's the people who are smoking. The other thing, I suppose, that you're responsible for is to prevent people from starting smoking in the first place. I was just reading this is from the 2013 report. The key area of concern is how best to prevent young people from starting to smoke. Given that about 2% of smokers quit and 5,500 smokers die every year, it is estimated that tobacco industry needs to recruit at least 50 new smokers every day just to maintain the smoking rates at their current level. And since approximately 80% of smokers start when they are children, most of these new smokers are actually children.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I read your 2018 report as well, and there isn't any mention of vaping. Vaping has happened very quickly.
Exactly. I think you've summarised it very well, Ray. I think vaping is something that has emerged. It's complex. It's to some extent
Why is it complex?
Well, it's complex because the technologies that we're speaking about, the products themselves, are changing all the time. Mm. It's complex because there are debates in terms of the relative harms and benefits of e-cigarettes. So I think from the perspective of people in the public, they might be hearing mixed messages when it comes to vaping.
But it's your job now to cut through all of that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And what is your message then about vaping?
Well, I think in terms of vaping, let's start with the facts. Right. So the first thing is, what is vaping? So vaping involves heating a liquid that contains nicotine. So somebody is receiving nicotine through that. They're not burning tobacco, so they're not exposed to the same chemicals that would be associated with cigarettes. But it does contain nicotine. In terms of the use of e-cigarettes across the population, about 3-4% of people use it.
We have seen that increase in terms of younger people.
Yes. So we've seen that increase. If you look at the population age 15 and over, we have seen a particular increase, a fourfold increase in those people that are age 15 to 24. And then focusing in particularly around children and young people, if we look at the ESPAD study in the period between 2015 and 2019, we saw a doubling in the current use of e-cigarettes among children and young people. So that's quite concerning, particularly because with the ESPED survey, that was associated with an increase in smoking in that population as well.
But there's the thing, because they were saying that children who vape are 4 or 5 times more likely to start smoking.
Absolutely. So what you're summarising there, Ray, is a piece of research that was done by the Health Research Board. So we know through the work done by the Health Research Board that children who vape are more likely to go on and smoke. So that's a huge concern for us at the moment. And I think let's not forget as well, even for those children who are using e-cigarettes who perhaps don't go on and smoke, the e-cigarette itself is very, very dangerous. So we know that the nicotine associated with addiction. It also has particular effects on children and young people's brains. So we know that it affects their concentration and it affects their impulse control. It affects their mood as well. And then we're quite uncertain in terms of what the long-term consequences will be in terms of e-cigarette use. So certainly for the population who are children and young people, we would say there are no benefits associated with e-cigarettes. There are only harms. And it's very important that the government move in terms of that piece of legislation that you mentioned to protect children and safeguard them against the sale of e-cigarettes and nicotine.
And when is that legislation going to be introduced?
So we heard from the minister late in 2022 that the plan is to bring that forward this year.
Okay. You see, the worrying thing for me is that, and I remember talking about this just before I started broadcasting, that you had the might of the tobacco industry up against, yourselves in the HSE.
That's it.
They have zillions of dollars and euros and pounds to spend. Yes. You have a limited budget.
That's right.
And they can spin stories. They can fund research.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is happening with vaping.
I agree, Ray. And I think what we're seeing is what we would call the tobacco industry playbook. So the sort of tactics that they would have used to recruit young people and children into smoking. We're seeing that played out in terms of e-cigarettes as well. So we're seeing advertising, promotions, colours, flavours, etc. etc. So I think it'll be very important. Ireland, I think, has been slow in terms of this issue. If you look at other developed countries around the world, they already have safeguards in place to protect
children. In some
countries,
they're banned.
And we need to move on that here as well.
Yeah. I just did a bit. So there's, for example, Elf Bar Cherry. Fruity flavour that features a consistent cherry flavour throughout each vape with a fruity aftertaste.
Yeah.
Right? So you get 600 puffs. Limited research. That's the equivalent of two packs of cigarettes. Now, 2 packs of cigarettes will cost you around €31. How much will that disposable vapor cost you? €7.99.
Yeah, so it's all very concerning. As I said, Ray, I think what we're seeing is all of the tactics that were well rehearsed and shown to be effective by the tobacco industry in terms of recruiting young people into smoking are being played out again in terms of e-cigarettes. So I think it's very, very important that the government would move in terms of that piece of legislation, that children will be protected and safeguarded from the retail of e-cigarettes and tobacco products. I mean, the other thing that I'd speak about as well is there late in 2022, we also saw the enactment of the Online Safety and Media Regulation Bill, and I think that's a real opportunity in terms of intervening in relation to social media and making sure that children are protected against that as well. And then, of course, within the HSE, we have a role to play as well. So we're doing work in terms of schools and the SPHE curriculum. We're doing work in terms of communities and initiatives like Planet Youth.
It'd be terrible, wouldn't it, Paul, to see another generation lost
absolutely.
To a harmful thing
absolutely.
Like
and that, and I think we know as well, that's not what the public want.
No.
So we went out, Ray, and we did a piece of work with the public back in 2022.
And I know there was
so they want to see this spot to an end.
You're pushing an open door. Yeah, I know that. But so thanks very much, Dr. Paul Kavanagh, who is Public Health Advisor to the HSE Quit Programme, and quit.ie is there if you're attempting to give up the cigarettes. Thanks, Paul.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. On smoking, I was recently diagnosed with Crohn's disease. I was told by the consultant to give up cigarettes. I signed up with quit.ie and talked to a quit smoking advisor once a week. It's a great help, says that person. And somebody else says, when I was in my 40s, I was smoking 30 cigarettes a day. I'd been smoking since I was 13. I developed asthma, had to stop, but could not face giving up from 30 a day. Someone advised me, you can't give up 30 cigarettes, but you can always give up the next one. I tried this, giving up the next one when I wanted one, saying to myself, I'll have one in an hour. Just by doing this, I came down from 30 to 20 to 15 to 10. And when I got below 10, let's see where this is going. I can't read that. Oh, yeah. When I got below 10, I set a date to stop and I told all my friends and family about the date I had to stop. That was 35 years ago. Haven't smoked since, says Rory. Brilliant. And most teens are skipping traditional cigarettes now and going straight to vaping. The worrying thing, though, of course, is that vaping, and we're seeing this from research in the States, is a gateway to cigarettes. We used to be appalled at tobacco companies adding flavours to cigarettes. Now vapes have fruit flavours. Most people think it's harmless. It ain't. I think there are medical conditions we aren't even aware of that will come down the track in 10 years. You are right, because there is no long term research on the effects of vaping, because they haven't been around long term. Vaping should be banned, in my opinion. My teenagers are vaping and coughing constantly. A worrying thing in a piece that I read this morning was that the bad stuff in vaping is different to the bad stuff in cigarettes. So the people who do both are being doubly harmful to themselves. Why don't we copy New Zealand in banning smoking, asks Bob. And in New Zealand, they've introduced legislation that means that anyone born after 2008 will never be able to buy a cigarette or tobacco products. And it's called the Tobacco-Free Generation. Good afternoon. I'm asthmatic. Vaping smoke triggers an asthma attack quicker than cigarette smoke for me, says Linda. Am I right in thinking you're not allowed to vape in restaurants? Is happening a lot, really inconsiderate. I don't know what the rules are and the legislation is around that. My niece visited me from the UK a while back and she was vaping. I said to her, did you smoke? She said no, that the vapes are a huge thing among the youth over there. Those who never smoked are now vaping. And of course they have disposable vaping now, and $7.99 for the equivalent of, and correct me if I'm wrong, the equivalent of two packs of cigarettes, which will cost you €31. Declan says, based on her faint recollection, this is on Sheila. Based on her faint recollection to which film Colin and she worked on together previously, and her vague recollection of looking into a video TV shop in that film scene, I think that Sheila may have last worked with Colin on the Cate Blanchett starring, Veronica Guerin biopic directed by the late Joel Schumacher. Colin has a brief cameo as a football fan looking at a Man United match pre-internet days when Cate Blanchett's Veronica, because she played Veronica Guerin, joins him for a brief chat about the team's performance. However, this is purely based on memory, but the film was shot in Dublin. Colin had worked with the director before on his breakthrough role in Tigerland. Go Sheila, says Declan. Thanks for that, Declan. And we'll pass that information on to Sheila. Now, our quiz. Two quizzers standing by, and we have a prize as well. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in the Galmont Hotel and Spa, located on the idyllic shores of Lough Atoya, down there in Galway City. It has everything going for it. It has the outdoor terrace. It has the Spirit One award-winning spa. It has the Cooper's Bar. And, of course, it's right there, right next to Galway City. So it has everything that Galway City has to offer as well. TheGalmont.com. TheGalmont.com. Hello, Maria. Or even Maria Travers. Maria. Hello, Maria.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. Where are you?
I'm in Dublin.
Dublin. Whereabouts in Dublin?
In Clondalkin.
Right. Clondalkin. Great. Who were we talking to yesterday who's from Clondalkin originally? Mary Kennedy. Did you know that she was originally from Clondalkin?
I think so.
You think so? Right. What's going on in your life at the moment?
I'm working from home. I'm a childminder and I've had a busy day and good day.
Yeah. So you mind other people's children?
I do indeed, yeah.
How many?
Two.
Two, right, okay.
Yeah.
And have you got children of your own?
I do. They're grown up. Youngest, my baby, is nearly 18.
Ah, right. And whereabouts are they at in their school career type thing?
Sophie is going into fifth year.
Right.
And, you know, getting ready, knuckling down for next year.
Yeah.
Big, you know, leaving, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And who else? So Sophie and?
Jack. Jack is 22 and he's over in Derby.
Right.
Near Nottingham. He's doing an apprenticeship over there.
Great. And is that it? So, just the two of them?
That's it.
Yeah. A gentleman's family, as they say. Have you seen the Banshees of Inisherin?
I have, actually, yeah.
Well.
Yes.
What's your review?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, the husband may have said different, but I actually loved Colin Farrell's performance. He was amazing. And obviously, who doesn't love Brendan Gleeson?
Exactly. Who doesn't love Brendan Gleeson? That's a great way of putting it. But he was brilliant in it. Both of them were brilliant. And everybody, the supporting cast, including Sheila, was brilliant in it. Now, you're up against Patrick Darby, who's from County Westmeath. How are you doing, Patrick?
Great. How are things?
Good. Whereabouts in County Westmeath are you?
Just about 6 miles outside of Mullingar.
Right.
A place called Sonna. It's near Ballinacarrigan.
What's the name of the place?
It's Sonna.
Sonna.
It's a little country place. Pubs or anything in it, really. A few houses around. And
Sonna. Sonna. S-O-N-N-A. Where does that come from? Any idea?
There was a Sonna house, all right.
Right.
Back in the time of the War of the Independence and the whole lot, but the Black and Tans burnt it down. So
right.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I'm not sure.
Well, I tell you what, we very learned listeners. So I'm going to put out the call to see if anybody knows the origins of the name Sonna, the place name Sonna, S-O-N-N-A. Because it doesn't sound Irish to me.
No, there was a man down in Ballinacarrigan, Tom Shanley was his name.
Right.
Now, he orchestrated in a kind of a history little booklet for around the areas.
Mm.
So I'm not sure if there's anything in that.
Oh, he might know. Yeah,
but the man has passed on now.
Oh, is he? Right. Okay.
He did kind of put his theories to it, and there were certain people involved in getting it together and the whole lot.
Okay, Sonna, S-O-N-N-A. Have you seen Banshees?
I have, yeah.
Well?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I like Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell, especially, well, look at when they weren't talking, but and Barry Keoghan as well. I liked him in it as well.
Yeah, and Kerry Condon. It's something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great when the Irish come together, kind of in a film, and it's made in Ireland and the whole lot.
Yeah.
It benefits the whole lot of the country and the whole lot, really.
It does. Right. Okay. Now, three questions each, Maria and Patrick. If you go for a long clip and you get it right, you get a point. If you go for a short clip and get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Maria.
Good luck to you too.
That's Patrick there. Maria, it's 1991 is the year, which is what, 32 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
Short.
Short, okay. This supernatural black comedy film about a macabre household was a hit on the big screen in 1991. Can you name it?
Uncle Fester, how do you know so much?
I've been around.
The Addams Family.
Yes, well done. The clip wasn't even over. The Addams Family is correct. There's a great spin-off called Wednesday on Netflix, if you haven't seen it.
Oh, I started watching it. Amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it? Really amazing. Probably better than the original film. Now, that's a good 2 point start for you, Maria. Patrick, to you, movies from 1991. Do you want to go long or short?
I will go short, Ray.
Okay,
please.
This was a hugely popular comedy in 1991 which detailed the trials and tribulations of planning a major life event. Can you name it?
If I had to move out all the furniture and add amps and repaint the walls and get a new tux and pay for swans...
What do you think? A comedy which detailed the trials and tribulations of planning a major life event.
Father of the Bride, was it?
It is. That was Steve Martin there. And of course, Martin Short famously was Franck. And they're back together in that thing on Disney. But you get 2 points for that. Well done. Now, good start from both of you. Maria, second question is on music from 1991. Long or short?
Long.
Short again. This was the lead single from this grunge band's second album in 1991 that brought them to world notoriety. Can you name the song or the band? Who's that?
That's going to drive me mad. That is... No.
No. No, the name of the song or the band would do me. Nothing. Nothing there. No.
No.
No. Smells Like Teen Spirit, Nirvana. That's what we were looking for there. Okay. Patrick, a chance for you to go in front. Music from 1991. Do you want to go long or short?
I go short, really, please.
Okay. Staying in the grunge-ish genre, this was a single that helped propel this group into the mainstream. Can you name the song or the band? I don't ever wanna feel
like I did that day. Oh, yeah, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Right,
it is,
please.
Under the Bridge, yeah. That's 2 points for you. Now, Maria, that puts you under a good bit of pressure. We're down to the final question. And you probably need to go for a short one, don't you? Okay, good luck with this.
Indeed.
Yeah, get this right and it keeps you in the game. News and current affairs. The Fine Gael Ordesh was interrupted by a surprise guest performance from which comedian that you will hear right now? Here's your short clip.
I'm Mr. Bruton, don't go, listen. Merciful Redeemer. What are you doing here? What are you doing?
Who's that?
No, I can't think of her name. Red hair.
Comedian. Comedian.
What's his name?
No. It's not a what's. It's a what's her name.
It's a her name.
Yeah.
It's a her.
Yeah. So do you want to?
No.
Not coming. Okay. You're going to kick yourself when you hear who it is. It's Twink. That's Twink.
God, that's dirty.
Yeah.
All right.
And they got a mixed reaction, her appearance at the Fine Gael Ordesh.
I say so.
Maria, we're going to send you out a Radar Show Keep Cup. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, mind yourself, Maria. Bye now. Bye.
Bye. And well done.
Yeah, well done,
Thank
Patrick.
Thank you, Maria.
Patrick, yeah, indeed, well done. And you and a person of your choice are off to the Galmont Hotel, and you can go to thegalmont.com to see what's in store for you. Well done, Patrick.
Thanks very much, Ray, for having me on.
And we find out anything about the origin of your place name, Sana, we will let you know. Thanks, Patrick. Good luck. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, well done, Brian. He's gone onto IMDb and he's looked up Sheila Flitton's IMDb. She's the Banshee from the Banshees of Inisherin, also known as Mrs. McCormack. And her, Sheila Flitton, and Colin Farrell were in an episode of Ballycus Angel together back in the day. And that's where they met before. So thanks for sorting that out for us, Brian. Good afternoon to Alison Keating, psychologist. Good afternoon, Alison. Good afternoon, psychoanalyst Ray O'Neill. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We'll get to it because the quiz ran on a little bit. So, dear Ray and Alison, could you please sort this out for me? I want to end a friendship. For the last couple of months, I've been re-evaluating everything in my life. This is sort of related to Banshees of Inisherin, I suppose. My job, my lifestyle, my friendships. I realised that I was quite unhappy and wanted to get to the root cause of it. I've been making moves to change my employment, which has given me some optimism, and I gave up drinking in the last 6 weeks, which has given me a renewed outlook, and I felt healthier as a result. I was never a problem drinker, but as a 45-year-old woman, I just got bored of occasional weekend hangovers and not doing anything as a result. I am single and have a great group of friends who I see regularly. However, there is one friend who relies on me far too much for her emotional well-being, and I realised never asks me how I am doing. Everything is always about her. She also only wants to meet to drink wine together, which I have now given up. And when I said I quit drinking, she was horrified at first and then laughed that I would never last. How do I tell her that I don't want her in my life anymore? She's not a bad person, but I just feel like she's a bad friend for me. Any advice would be welcome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't take the Brendan Gleeson approach.
No, please.
That's
don't.
What we all learned from that film.
Yeah, definitely.
I think. Well, go on, Ray. Go on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think with this one, it's just I think actually that your decision to stop drinking is going to end this friendship.
Yeah. Like, I think actually hold to that decision, hold firm on that, and congratulations on that decision. And I think, you know, your friend won't actually be that interested in you. She's looking for a wine buddy. Mm-hmm. If you're not providing the wine, I don't think she'll be providing the friendship.
Mm. Isn't it telling, though, that her friend has goaded her about giving up?
Absolutely.
And it won't last. Nah, 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 nah.
But I find, like, what I really can see is she only wants me to drink wine, but she actually just wants to wine. and like Ray's saying, you cut the wine out, the actual alcohol, and then, you know, this is not going to work. But I think that film is incredible. And we don't talk about the end of friendships, and women specifically feel very bad. Like, I'm not saying men don't feel bad for ending friendships, but it's nearly like there's an extra shame on it that you should be friends because it's historical and, you know, it's a long time. But there's so much going on for this woman. She really wants to make a change in every aspect of her life. And as Ray say, it's absolutely brilliant. But I think taking a step back, and I think what we struggle with is, how does she actually go about this? But I think naturally it will start to kind of peter out if they're not actually drinking together.
I'm just wondering, in friendships, do people take on roles?
Yes.
So she says there that, you know, I'm always listening to her, I'm there for her well-being. She never asks me how I am.
Mm.
But is that not common in friendships?
But it's not good.
It's not, right.
So as you said, there's a role there, and she's kind of in the counsellor role, unpaid counsellor role. and then resentment will build up. And like, if the friend is kind of goading her that she's not actually, you know, that she's given up drinking, it's a very bad sign that she probably just wants her to keep drinking, simply. But I just want to say congratulations to this person, because they really have taken a look at their lives and they're like, I want to make some changes. And when you make changes like that and create better boundaries, often friendships and relationships do fall to the side that need to.
Mm. And I really admire this woman for the changes she's making or whatever. Like, they're just great changes. And at 45, you're really proving that, you know, life can begin in your 40s, it can begin in your 50s, it can begin in your 60s. Yeah. But misery loves company. That doesn't mean that she has to stay company with misery.
Now, here's another thing I read over the Christmas, can't remember in which book, but change, all change involves loss.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you change a job, for example, you're losing your colleagues from before. When you change and you decide not to drink, you're losing an awful lot of people that would have been your drinking partners.
Yeah.
And there's a grieving process there as well. And I think if we spoke more about that, then people would realise that. That's not, it's not plain sailing, change.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's about like setting, she's trying to create better boundaries for the type of quality life that she wants to actually live. And when I was thinking about, you know, what can she do about this? I've got 10 tips on how to create healthier boundaries on my Instagram account. Okay, it's The Practical Psychologist. But something she needs to take note of is, she feels guilty about setting healthier boundaries for herself. It is saying a lot about the relationship.
Ah, right.
So to really question, have I always been kind of the good girl? Have I, you know, been more compliant and a people pleaser? And there's questions in there that might help her find a way to say what she needs to say in a way that's not going to hurt anyone's feelings. Well, it might hurt her feelings, but it's a decision that she's actually made, and maybe a way that actually might make it easier to navigate.
Okay.
And I think, sorry, Ray, but the Banshees has two examples. That one is, like, don't just ghost them. Because that just leaves so many unanswered questions. It can be quite hurtful to the other person. The other is when you tell them the truth, because that doesn't work out for the characters either. So the thing is to literally, Alison used a gorgeous phrase there, just to take a step back and another step back and another, and just be gradual with it, because if she can't whine with wine, it won't be happening.
No.
Right, okay, right. And I hope it works out for you. Now, Ray and Alison, my boyfriend and I have been together for coming up to 2 years now. We don't live together, but I feel it's the next step to take in our relationship. I've brought it up maybe 3 times in the last 5 months, and it always ends with us just saying as we are, just staying as we are. He has said he won't move in with me as he wants to buy a house himself. I suggested moving out of my place and renting together to have a place that's just ours, but that doesn't seem to be an option either. He will stay over in mine a lot, but it seems like moving in together just doesn't suit him. I'm now 36, and I feel if we're not progressing as a couple, I'm not sure when we will. Is it time to have a serious discussion about where our relationship is going? Much appreciated. Alison.
My first thought is, don't you deserve it to be a little bit easier? Because the discussion I think she needs to have is with herself first. And honestly, if a friend told her this, it just seems to be very one-sided. It seems a little immature in ways, you know, he wants this, he wants that. And that's fine. If that's the way he wants it, no problem. But it isn't kind of, it's not a great starting point for a relationship. And they're in it 2 years. She's 36. I think she needs to actually kind of look at this and say, is this the way I want it to be? It's quite a struggle. And I mean, life will provide, like, if they want to have children or if she wants to get married and if he doesn't, then that is something that she's to figure out now. You know, what are her non-negotiables on this? Because it's not a case of, you know, you're not an ultimatum, but you need to decide what you actually want. And that,
well,
I
you're
think,
saying, like, you know, like that movie, her biological clock is, you know,
well, it is
ticking.
It is
and,
ticking.
And that's a reality for women, isn't it?
Well, it is a reality. Yeah. And unfortunately, I think we have to just sometimes be very honest about that. And I just think it should be easier. You know, like it's he's saying he wants to buy a house, but does he want her in the house with him? Because I'm not getting that feeling.
Yeah. He wants to buy a house himself.
Yes.
Which sounds like she's not included in
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. This is a big generalisation, but, you know, men and commitment and all that.
Asher, I love commitment, Ray. Took me a long time to learn about it, but now that I'm in it, it's great. I think there's two things that I would pick out here. Like that last question, is it time to have a serious discussion about our relationship? It's always time. A serious relationship involves having serious discussions. Not every day, but certainly some format every week or certainly every month. New Year's resolutions, plans for 2023. That's what a couple in a serious relationship does. Mm. You have serious discussions. If you're tiptoeing around having a serious discussion, I think that says volumes around what this relationship may not be able to be. I think the other thing, just possibly, again, playing devil's advocate, is we do have a sense of the natural order of things. And so moving in together may be the next step for her, but it doesn't have to be. Maybe he would love to get married and love to have children, but the living in together isn't something he's thinking about. So just have a conversation. There's just a look, what steps, because here's where I'd like to be in 5 years' time for us. What do you think?
Yeah, it's easy for you to say that, but having a conversation like that is difficult, isn't it?
Absolutely. But living a
reality where you're wondering and you're living in uncertainty is really anxiety inducing. Yeah. You know, so I just think, like, I think these kind of conversations are things that we need to be literally educated on within schools, how to actually be in relationships and how to be treated well, how to value yourself. And you know, you should be getting, there should be some good feelings coming from a relationship, and you should be excited about your plans for the future.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Just very quickly, when is the best time to have that chat? Like, no drink taken, obviously.
Definitely no drink. This weekend,
okay. Or coffee.
Yeah, but even just say, look, can we have a conversation this weekend? So it isn't landed or blindsided.
Great advice. Okay.
And even a walk.
Yes.
Shoulder to shoulder.
So you're not looking at each other in the eye.
It's not so intense.
Or on a long drive. Okay. Alison Ray, thank you very
much.
Sarah and Cormac are on the way in Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.